Welcome to GameBooey, where we talk about gaming news that's not on your radar, but probably should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike. With me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Ahoy, mateys!
This week, we're going to be talking about a few things, including a somewhat interesting circumstance that came up late last night over the Twitters.
Yes.
If we seem a little sloppy today, it's because we are changing up the show from what we had originally planned to do today to talk about this Twitter issue, because I really feel like it's something worth discussing.
Indeed.
But, you know, before that, we want to follow up on some things we've talked about over the last few weeks. I think probably the most pressing one, and the one that most of you have probably already talked about in some capacity, would be the Mass Effect 3 Extended Cut hit this week.
Yes, 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 yes.
Obviously, as you know, First Mate Slagkick is very invested in this. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what they changed?
Well, I mean, I think the important thing to point out is, you know, BioWare was very clear about this. They didn't add any gameplay. I mean, people were like, well, there's no final battle. I'm like, no, they never said they were going to do that. They added cinematics, but I mean, that sounds like it's a cop-out, but it actually cleared up a lot of the plot holes in the story, almost all of the plot holes, I feel. And you still have endings that you have to choose from with Star Child, but I mean, the consequences of the endings, I think all three of them actually are really compelling, and you know, I mean, I there's still people out there, I'm sure, who are pissed. I choose not to read,
you know,
people's reactions.
I take issue with something you just said, and, you know, not with what you said, but the fact that this is a real thing. I'm kind of offended by the idea that every game has to have, like, a boss battle to be validated.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that complaint thrown at the Mass Effect 3 Extended Cut quite a bit, and all I can think is, like, that would be like someone saying, oh, every play has to have a main character die for tragedy. Like, no, we should be celebrating that BioWare did something a little different. There's no giant human skeleton Reaper Part 2 at the end of Mass Effect.
Yeah, we had that in Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought the whole running through London thing, killing off freaking zombie bitches, I mean, I thought that was pretty epic.
Yeah, it was a cool encounter. It was, you know, a big set piece. And then, you know,
I mean,
okay,
hello,
there wasn't a boss battle in the traditional sense, but I just don't see why that is a, like, such a sticking point for people. Like, are people so conditioned by, you know, Gears of War and Halo and what have you that, like, they really need this experience?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think we've talked about this, and, you know, our friends over on Entourage Radio have talked about this. Nobody is going to be was going to be happy. I mean,
I'm never happy.
What I meant to say is that not everybody is going to be happy. Of course, some people will be happy, but, you know, so, well, I think for, and the other complaint that I think people have been throwing out there that I think is ridiculous is that, like, oh, 3 months and this is all they could come up with. I was like, I'm sorry, do you understand what it takes to make cinematics?
Like, I actually
and
thought,
record all the dialogue.
I thought, considering how quickly they got it out, that there was a lot there.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're someone who has been kind of on the fence about going through 3 again because you were disappointed in the first set of endings, I mean, they're still the same endings, but, I mean, it really, they're fleshed out more, and I think have a lot more emotional weight. And I think the most important thing is that they've always said that, you know, the Mass Effect series is about hope for the future and that sort of thing. And I think that the what they've did to the epilogues really conveyed that. So
it'd be safe to say you enjoyed it.
I'm very happy. I do want more Mass Effect, but, I mean, that's just because I'm a fanboy.
Yeah, you know, after the endings, I didn't really play Mass Effect anymore after I beat 3 for the first time. I replayed 1 and 2 and then just stopped both of those replay characters at 3 and just never touched 3 again. After the extended cut endings, I think I am more likely to finally take both of those new characters through 3.
Yeah, I've got a Vanguard that I've been working on, and, you know, before I was like, I mean, I want to play through 3 again, but now I'm like, no, I definitely want to play through 3 again.
Yeah, so, you know, good on BioWare. There's also been a little bit of controversy because, you know, they added in an ending for if you shoot the Star Child in the head.
I didn't realize they had done that, so I just was trying to mess around, because I just thought it would just, like, you know, shoot the gun. And then it was like, oh, you got the fail hunting, so I'm like, no! And then I had to go do the whole, not the whole London thing over again, but I had to go back and do all of the Citadel stuff again.
That is super funny. You know, I have to say, I thought that that was great, that there's a failure ending where basically the entire life system gets wiped out and...
Yes, but the next cycle does kill off the Reapers.
Yeah, well, no, that's certainly implied. It might not have been the immediate next cycle. It could have been several cycles.
And, you know, I think...
But someone eventually, somewhere, gets through.
I think to wrap this up, I think the thing that I enjoy is that a lot of the confusion from the original endings that shipped to the game were cleared up, but I think there's still a lot left open to interpretation. You know, you were actually telling me that they went out of their way to not contradict indoctrination theory, so that's kind of cool. Although, you know, I don't really feel like that has to be the answer now. Like, you know, I'm pretty content.
Yeah, I agree, certainly. One thing I thought was really interesting about the fan reaction to these endings was, in particular, the fan reaction to the fail ending that we were just talking about. There's a lot of people who are very disappointed that shooting the Star Child results in the end of the cycle that we're currently fighting
in. Instead of, oh, you woke up from indoctrination, blah, blah, blah. Or...
Yeah, but... Like, no, I'm sorry, within the context of the game, if you accept that these events did happen definitely and indoctrination isn't a thing, then of course destroying the Crucible would prevent you from winning against the Reapers.
Yeah.
That was sort of the whole point of the game, was that you needed the Crucible.
Yeah.
And I don't know, as far as indoctrination theory goes... I just view that as the ending where Shepard dies. Like, he doesn't make it through indoctrination, but he doesn't wake up either. I don't really see how that makes any definitive statement. Other than destroying the Crucible is not the way to go.
Yeah, and you know, I did say that I was going to try and wrap up my thoughts, but I do have one more thing that you made me think of. You know, I've seen some people... being like, there is no canon ending that's official for Mass Effect 3. Although, I kind of feel like the Destroy ending where Shepard wakes up back on Earth, I kind of feel like that's maybe intended to be kind of the official one.
Well, you know, the breathing sequence still only happens at the end of that ending.
Right, right. And I think that people are like, no, there's no canon ending. It's supposed to be... like, whatever your Shepard does. But the thing is that there were canon and non-canon endings for 2.
Well, you know,
if your Shepard died in Mass Effect 2, then, you know, how could he have gone through 3? Or she, I'm sorry.
Well, it's worth saying, I think. First off, there may not be a canon ending yet. Until there's a Mass Effect 4, we're not really going to know.
Fingers crossed.
You know, they have said that they don't really intend to do a 4 in that context, that there will be other Mass Effect universe games, but not a, oh, this is what happened later from what Shep did. So it might be that we never have a canon ending exactly.
True.
But I really think it speaks to the quality of the new endings that I'd be okay with Synthesis being the canon ending.
Oh my god, Synthesis.
I'd even be okay with,
Control?
Well, with, Paragon Control. I wouldn't be okay with Renegade Control.
But well, that's, but I never played Renegade, so I didn't even see the Renegade.
It's pretty spooky. Renegade Control is pretty unpleasant. Like, it's, like, harrowing. I think that's a good word for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, well done to BioWare. Good job. We've been grousing about this for several minutes longer than I meant to, so...
Now we have something sad to talk about, don't we?
We do, we do. And I'm going to combine two topics into one. We found out last week that Anarchy Reigns will miraculously be coming to the U.S. after all.
Yay! And that's not the sad part. That's the good news.
Well,
here.
I feel that it's an interesting contrast. You know, but just to give you the info on that, Sega has confirmed that we'll be seeing a release in European and U.S. territories, or North America territories, sorry, in quarter one, 2013. Unfortunately, that means it's going to be competing against a lot of heavy hitters, which is not the best place for Anarchy Reigns. But, you know, maybe they can sell it on the back of P100, because that'll, you know, Wii U and P100 will probably be out by then. So hopefully there will be, you know, more Platinum Games fans than there are right now. But the unfortunate side is, as rumor and reports have been indicating for the last few months, Sega has officially started shutting down their European their European processes. They're basically going to be down to, you know, just their four intellectual properties that the early rumors had marked. And basically everything we initially feared is coming true. They're down to just, you know, Football Manager, that War game, and Sonic and shit. Like, yeah. The Total War stuff. It's not looking super pretty for Sega.
Yeah, it's scary. And I mean, let's hope that, you know, that we'll still see some good digital content being pushed, and, you know, that, you know, people will actually buy the digital, and that they'll be like, okay, so it's worth it for us to make this stuff, and...
Well, you know, there are two points on that, and the first is that they had said in their press release that was talking about their sort of downsizing, that they had something like between 75 and 90 digital titles scheduled to launch in the next year. And I mean, obviously some of those are probably going to be like Elmo's Playland or whatever,
oh,
shovelware bullshit. But included in that are the kind of things like, you know, the new Virtua Fighter digital release that they just did, which my understanding is officially already the most successful Virtua Fighter title that's ever been released in the U.S. So maybe digital will actually work out quite well for Sega. Maybe Americans will buy these Japanese-made games at a lower price point.
Yeah, we can hope. And, you know, I think it was a Gaff thread that I was looking at. There were two interesting points. The first one was just kind of a sad reflection on the fact that it's only been about 10 years since they left the hardware game. And now, you know, they're struggling with the software games. That was kind of a sad realization.
You know, it's a sad realization, but I think it's really important that you don't form a view of, like, a fake correlation. I think Sega would be doing much worse right now if they were making hardware.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really, the unfortunate truth, in my eyes, is that Sega has been doing a really shitty job leveraging their IPs and their assets in the current market. And not just for the last year or two, but you look at something like the Sonic Next that came out, you know, back in, what, 2006?
Oh, God, the one with the human princess, and then Sonic makes out with her, or something creepy like that.
Yeah.
I avoided that like the plague.
That game was god-awful, and I say that as, at the time, a huge fan of the 3D Sonic games.
Right.
I liked those 3D Sonic games basically more than anything at the time.
Yeah, and then there was Shadow. Did Silver ever get his own game?
I don't think so, but he is, I believe, the main protagonist, or antagonist, I'm sorry, he's the main antagonist in Sonic Rivals. Yeah, and I just don't, I don't get it. Like, okay, Sega, when was the last time you put out a Streets of Rage game again? What are you guys doing with the Golden Axe IP, or Altered Beast?
Yeah.
It's easy to, you know, feel really bad for Sega's current position. Certainly, I feel quite bad for them. But let's not pretend that they've been making solid business choices for the last 10 years.
That's true. Now, you know, the other point that was brought up is that someone had said that if this means that they'll still be able to focus on doing the arcade industry in Japan, that they were fine with that, as long as they could still, you know, keep, you know, making arcade games. So that was kind of interesting, because I think a lot of times people forget about arcade. I mean,
well, a lot of Americans do. Obviously, if you're a part of sort of worldwide communities online, you'll see that, you know, people in other areas, you know, other countries certainly still have arcades as a very real part of their life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially Japan. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's just it's kind of a sad fact of life that Americans don't really do the arcade thing. I mean, it's not, I mean, you know, it's not entirely true. We still hit up the arcade at the mall, but it's just it's not what it used to be even, like, 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're blessed in that we have two real arcades less than 25 miles from us.
Yeah.
Like, if we wanted to go hit up some Blaze Blue Continuum Shift in the arcade, we could. I mentioned that to a buddy of mine that lives out in Ohio just earlier this week, and he was like, wait, there's an arcade version of Continuum Shift? And I was just like, girl, because, you know, it came out in the arcade first. That's how balanced testing happens. But yeah, it's just it's like a completely different culture in our area because we have arcades, and then even more than that in other countries.
Yeah, so I mean we are lucky because as residents of the San Francisco Bay Area, we actually have arcades to go to. I feel sad for people who don't have that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's, you know, certainly the majority of this country. And even then, it's nothing compared to what they have in Japan. So, Sega, you know, they run a lot of arcades in Japan. They make a lot of arcade games that presumably are still quite popular. So hopefully they can, you know, keep alive through that. I believe Sammy, they're a subsidiary of Sammy these days, right?
It's one way or the other. I never really figured that out.
Well, Sammy has a booming pachinko business even still, so, you know, hopefully they'll get by and they'll continue to be able to make great games, because, it's, you know, good Sega, when they're on, is superb.
Indeed.
I believe it's now time to move things over and bring you some...
Oh my god, news.
So, Nintendo, in sort of a last-minute announcement, has once again done another of their Nintendo Direct events.
Yeah.
And this one is noteworthy, actually, because I think probably you've already heard about it. I make a joke a lot of the times that we're basically the only two guys on the internet that don't bash Nintendo. I still think that's more true than not, but everyone was talking about the 3DS XL last week when it was announced.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone anticipated that it was coming eventually, but I, for one, did not expect it to be coming this soon.
Well, I'm actually surprised it didn't come sooner. When you look at the turnaround time from the DS to the DS Lite... we are past the point in the 3DS's life where the DS Lite came out in the DS's
really?
Life. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, and I remember, because I traded in my fat DS to get a DS Lite, so I mean...
Yeah, it's been like 16 months that the 3DS has been on market, and I believe the DS Lite came out at like 13 months. So, For people who are really looking at it and crunching the numbers, it's kind of been like, really? This should have come out already.
Huh.
Another thing, you know, is that it was a 3DS XL rather than a 3DS Lite. That I'm not really surprised about, though.
Oh, me either, yeah.
I didn't really think it made more sense to make a smaller, prettier 3DS. Like, that thing's already compact. I think going bigger was the only way they could go. And I'm, personally, I'm hell of excited. This gigantic, beautiful screen in, you know, 3D. And something I noticed from watching all of the videos is that the visuals of at least Mario Kart still look great on this thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have some sort of filter, if Mario Kart was designed knowing that it was going to have this alternate display, and so it has some other, I don't know, a logarithm or whatever the word would be. But for whatever reason, whereas the DSi XL makes DS games look super pixelated and super nasty and just really ugly, Mario Kart 7, at least, on the 3DS XL, looks super good.
That's a good sign. I mean, I don't know, just financially speaking, if I'm going to pick one up, just because, you know, yeah, larger screen, but I'm fine with my 3DS for now.
You know, I do most of my gaming on my PC, but my second next source of sort of most gaming is on my portables. You know, I have my commute, and as a result, I play, I don't know, 10 to 15 hours of portable gaming every week. So for me, like, fuck yeah, I'm gonna buy a 3DS XL. That larger screen will be a good thing for my eyes.
That's true, and I mean, it's also important to point out, you are someone who has, like, every console you've ever owned, including your Virtual Boy, probably back to, like, Master System. Do you still have your Commodore 64?
I do. It's in that closet right there.
So, I mean, Captain Spike is someone who has kept every gaming system he's ever owned. And also, on top of that, you still have your fat DS, right?
Of course, yeah.
You have a DS Lite.
Yep.
You have a DSi.
I do.
You don't have a DSi XL, but my point being is that Captain Spike's someone who buys repeat handhelds and that sort of thing.
You know, I didn't used to be. I only had, for Game Boy, I only had a fat Game Boy and a Game Boy Color. I did eventually buy a Game Boy
Pocket,
but not when it was new. That I actually ended up getting several years later. So, I am now the kind of person who rebuys. I didn't rebuy any of the PSPs until the Go was hacked, because a hacked PSP Go is about the coolest handheld console of all time.
Yeah, and you know, I think something that's kind of interesting for me is that it's easy to think, like, oh, Nintendo redesigns their handhelds all the time, but you actually have to realize, I mean, we don't know, if there's going to be any future iterations of 3DS, but, I mean, Game Boy Advance, there were a couple of those. You know, we just talked about original Game Boy. Although, arguably, Game Boy Color was kind of a step up. But, you know, I mean, the thing is, look at Sony and the PlayStation 3.
Well, no, it's, again, anyone who complains about new redesigned hardware and, oh, Nintendo's milking or whatever. Like, no, this is the way that electronics go. Even in non-gaming
hardware. iPhone 4S?
Well, I mean, you know, that's the really easy comparison, but I was shopping for receivers, you know, for radio, stereo, whatever. I was shopping for receivers last week, and there's such a disparity even between the same, like, models of the same model number, but between different years. Like, oh, the 2011 version of that Denon receiver is way different than the 2012 version. And I say that because that's the actual model I ended up buying. So, it was really enlightening to me, like, no, this thing that everyone complains about it happening in gaming happens in all electronics industry, and it's actually way more prevalent in every other part of the industry than gaming.
That's true. Very true.
We have annual iterations of, you know, as first mate Sidekick said, we have annual iterations of the iPhone, you know, certainly annual iterations of most of the Android phones.
I mean, let's not forget that by the time you buy a new laptop, it's probably already going to be replaced in, like, 2 months by something better.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That goes for all computers, and even a computer you build yourself. I dare say that gamers almost have it easy if you really look at the big picture. Maybe this is just a circumstance of the perception of gamers as complainers that are kind of younger, but I definitely feel like there's a lot of hate spewed that is disproportionate to the actual amount of quote-unquote gouging that we see happening, because, you know, it invariably people end up saying, oh, Nintendo / Sony / Microsoft, they're gouging us, they're milking us, but, like, no, dude, there's been a couple of SKUs for each console and each portable, but still not nearly.
I will still say that I think PS3 kind of took it to a ridiculous place.
You know, they did a little bit. It's hard for me to fully agree, even though it is funny to talk about. The core PS3 hardware has undergone, you know, a limited number of iterations. But there were so many SKUs for different size hardwares, or coming with Spider-Man 3 on Blu-ray, or Motor Storm, or, I mean, I can't say this for fact, but if I were to wiki PS3 hardware bundles and see that there was 30 plus SKUs, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that says it all, I think.
Yeah, so that was, like, the big news from the Direct conference, but...
Yeah, there was some cool, you know, the Kirby anniversary bundle, which we've talked about on this show previously, so we won't go into too much detail, but, you know,
yeah,
it was detailed
super cute.
And shown.
I'm excited for it now.
Nintendo once again confirmed Fire Emblem coming to the U.S., so that was cool. They showed a bunch of... new Mario Brothers 2, so that's cool. I'm really excited for that game. One other thing that's really important that I want to talk about, though, sort of the big drama of the 3DS XL was that there was no second analog stick added. And in addition to that, there was no additional shoulder buttons added, you know, both of which are added by the Circle Pad Pro attachment to the current 3DS. It's worth mentioning, though, Nintendo has confirmed and shown that there is a 3DS XL version of the Circle Pad Pro. So for people who really want that extra pad that two games use, and those buttons that I think no game other than Monster Hunter use, here you go. It's gonna happen. Just not a built-in part of the console.
Why would they alter the design of the XL unless they had, like, huge plans to, like, make every first-party title utilize it?
And I'll be honest, I don't really ever foresee Nintendo integrating the Frankenstick into its design philosophy for games. I don't think Nintendo is gonna make a game that can't be played optimally by a 3DS fresh out of the box. So, and that to me is what this is about. If they added a second analog stick onto the XL, they'd almost be obligated to start using it. And then people who have original 3DSs would be kind of like, oh, I have to buy a Frankenstick now. And I don't think Nintendo's the kind of company that wants to do that. It's just like sort of the Wii Motion Plus. For all their talk that every game was going to use it, they didn't really do much with it, despite the fact that it really does make the Wiimote way better.
That's true.
In fact, the only big one I can think of really was, like, Zelda. And they sold a version of Zelda that came with one.
Yeah, that gorgeous golden Hyrulean...
Yeah, yeah.
Wiimote Plus, yeah.
Yeah, I actually bought that.
Me too.
That shit was so sick. Moving on, though. Capcom this weekend, like right now, was in Japan, was holding their Capcom Summer Jam event.
Now, before you talk about this, doesn't that sound like a summer concert? Like, yeah, it's the Capcom Summer Jam featuring Katy Perry and Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, it actually totally does. When I first heard Capcom Summer Jam, I was like, not sure if concert or press event.
Right?
So
what did that Summer Jam serve up to us?
You know, not much. There was a new Monster Hunter 4 trailer. It was confirmed for release in spring of 2013.
They're really giving a lot of hype for Monster Hunter 4, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, that series is so big in Japan that, I mean, you kind of have to. That's a game you sell the shit out of because people are going to buy it up. I'm concerned that we may not get it in the U.S.
I know.
I pray to God that we do, because I love Monster Hunter. I still get kind of mad that we haven't gotten the 3DS Monster Hunter game yet, despite the fact that everyone I know at Capcom tells me to hold my horses and not get mad. Still, I cannot help but get mad. There was a new trailer for EX Troopers, the 3DS and PS3 Monster Hunter spinoff. That game is looking better and better. The new trailer for it has some, like, action game elements, like more like a Bayonetta or Devil May Cry, paired with the sort of tried-and-true shooter action of Lost Planet. A lot of juggles and combos.
Yeah, they showed that off during the Japanese Nintendo Direct conference. And, you know, that was kind of the first time I had been familiar with it. I'm like, oh, even though this is in Japanese and I don't know what they're saying, it looks cool. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. Moving on from the Summer Jam, though, something that I thought was interesting and I wanted to bring up because, you know, this is my kind of game. The Final Fantasy III DS remake, because I didn't want you to think it was a Final Fantasy 3DS remake, that would be a completely different thing, is now up on the Android Marketplace. And, you know, surprisingly, it looks way better than it did on the DS.
It actually does, I will give you that.
You know, the texture work of the original kind of brings it down a little. There's some really muddy textures that are just like, girl, someone had to have known that looks unacceptable now. But all of the character models seem to be way higher poly. It just looks way better. So hopefully they'll bring that to iOS.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that port has an iOS version. I don't know that it looks that pretty. Or even better, a Vita port, that would be great. Although, you know, now that I'm saying that, it just occurred to me, I think they are doing a PSP port. I think that was in Famitsu last week. So, maybe we'll be playing that sooner or later.
Excellent.
Yeah,
but I mean, as much as it's like wall Android, it does look pretty good. And like, you know, there's some screenshots, which we will link to you on our website. What's that?
Oh, I don't know. You have to tell me.
GameBuoy.org.
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 Stop. Hammer time. I think that's it anyway, at least for...
News. Oh my god, news.
Oh my god.
Ermagerd
nurse. So, you know, it's time for sort of the meat of the episode. And I apologize, this is going to seem a little loosey-goosey, at least a little more so than usual. I really want to talk, though, about the sort of boys club mentality in games journalism. And, you know, this is a big topic. We cannot possibly do it justice. But I really hope to at least sort of bring it to light and get people thinking about it. Last night, Ryan Perez, you know, now formerly of Destructoid, as he was let go at, what, like, midnight last night, basically assaulted Felicia Day on Twitter. This is not the first time this has happened in games journalism in the last month or two. You know, we had that Xbox report that the joystick guys had called out as probably being fake, and then some other joystick guys had started defending them for posting things that were probably fake and saying, you know, that games journalists don't call each other out and you have to defend each other. And it's kind of gross, this really incestuous circle that games journalism is stuck in right now, to say nothing of the unhealthy way that games journalists get kickback from publishers so that, you know, they can get, publishers can look forward to that Metacritic of 80 plus that they're going to get from giving kickbacks. What's really, to me, interesting about this Destructoid Ryan Perez issue, though, is that Felicia Day is just so sweet.
Yeah, and I mean, really, I mean, this guy is just, okay, I'm not going to go out and attack him and stoop down to his level, but it's, I mean, it's like, he seems very out of touch with a lot of things, and I mean, by looking at his Twitter, you can kind of, gather that, but, I mean, Felicia Day is not just like, oh, I'm a cute girl who likes games because being nerdy is... it's not some, like, Big Bang Theory bullshit where being nerdy is cool and trendy. She's, like... You know, she did that Dragon Age DLC. She was involved in that and did a little short film for it. So, I mean, she's a real nerd. Oh. I mean that with the highest amount of respect.
When I think of, you know, like, the web series that she did for Dragon Age, the video, mm-hmm. I'm actually, if that were all she had done, I might almost understand where Ryan Perez is coming from. Almost. I still think it's an inappropriate thing to really even do. Like, dude, really? But, it's, a lot of people make fan videos. I don't necessarily think all of them need to be exalted. But Felicia Day is a writer. She has written video game content. She made a show about what it's like to be in a guild that I show people to be like, no, this is seriously what life is like when you're a serious raider.
And it's not just that, like, oh, this would be a funny thing to make a web series about. It's like, no, she actually plays World of Warcraft, shows up to BlizzCon.
Yeah, this is not a CBS comedy bullshit that's appropriating our culture. Like, this is a real... She has clearly lived this life and thought it was funny enough to make a show out of. And then she did, and it was funny.
Yeah, you know, thanks to her work with Joss Whedon, she's a little more prominent than, you know, some other, like, web-based things might be, so...
Yeah, so I just... This whole thing, it leaves a really gross taste in my mouth. And then, you know, this guy Ryan Perez, Will Wheaton, came to Felicia's defense, because they're close.
Will Wheaton.
You know, Will Wheaton and Felicia Day are close. Yeah, I've expended as many times as I get to pronounce Will Wheaton that way. So, Ryan Perez then attacks Will Wheaton. Like, dude, really, no, Will Wheaton is a gigantic nerd, too, like...
No, and can you please share with the listeners out in Radioland what type of Kotaku, shitty shit, down the shitter, dung bullshit that he said? Because it was just, like, not only was it not even clever or funny, but it was offensive.
Well, Ryan Perez called Will Wheaton a opportunistic puddle of miscarriage soup.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, you opportunistic puddle of miscarriage soup.
Like, do you understand why that's an inappropriate thing for a journalist to write on his Twitter?
To be fair, I'm pretty sure that he had tweeted that after he'd been fired from Destructoid, correct?
I believe that's true. The timestamp here says 12:16 a.m.
And I just have to say,
I believe that was just a little bit after he was fired.
I have to say that I definitely have a lot of respect for Destructoid for, you know, not tolerating that sort of shit from their employees. You know, and I have to be honest, when I'm checking for gaming news and content, I sometimes don't remember to check Destructoid. I mean, it's not one that I frequent as much, but, you know, out of all the sites out there...
I have to say, my problem with Destructoid is that their main draw, to me, is Jim Sterling's satire pieces. And I have nothing wrong with Jim Sterling, despite the fact that his style of Hunter Thompson, gonzo games journalism...
It's some Fear and Loathing in Fallout New Vegas.
Yes, exactly. it's just not my bag.
Yeah.
I have nothing wrong with it. I think that he recognizes a lot of the problems in the industry. I have a great deal of respect for that guy. I just don't... For me, that's not something that's compelling to read.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, as we talk about in our Waltaku segments, I mean, there's just a real problem in the gaming industry, and I would say that one of the few sites that actually seems to be doing it right is 1UP. And,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I had not really frequented 1UP for a while, and so I remember them kind of being, you know, just serving up gaming news and reviews and, you know.
Yeah, they were really basic. They existed, you know, as an offshoot of EGM for a long time. And then, I guess, you know, maybe half a year ago, Jeremy Parrish, whom wrote for, you know, EGM among other places, many listeners out there may remember him as Toasty Frog. He, first off, in his own time, has been putting out some really incredible print game materials, like really nice hardcover compilations looking at entire generations worth of games. But he took over as editor-in-chief of 1UP about 6 months ago and just completely changed its format into a more editorial-based sort of site to have real serious discussions about games.
Yeah, you know, I was really impressed when I went over to... because interestingly enough, I was, like, reading his Twitter and I'm like, oh, this guy has really decent things to say. So I went over to check out what 1UP was up to these days, and it was like there was this whole just like editorial different articles about like women in gaming and like how they're portrayed. I was like, wow. So, you know, kudos to them.
You know, and of course I'd be remiss not to mention that Parrish is possibly most well known for his old podcast, which it goes, but he's only now a guest contributor. He has so many responsibilities on his plate. But that would be Retronauts, and our podcast probably would not exist if not for Retronauts. Listening to that was sort of the show that made me think, oh, I would like to do a show not like this, but that's structured like this, that has room for sort of in-depth discussion about particular issues, rather than focusing wholly on the news and what's current.
Right. But, I mean, on the, you know, by and large, I mean, they're kind of,
they're kind of the only ones out there doing it right.
Yeah, yeah.
Even stuff like, is it Next Gen Magazine? A lot of people love those guys. I'm sorry, I said Next Gen. I meant Edge. Obviously, those of you out there are following along. But, you know, Edge, even Edge, everyone talks about them as, like, a paragon shining example, except when it comes to review scores, and then everyone agrees, like, oh, well, I mean, you know, the text will be okay, but the review score is going to be off.
Yeah.
So it's not really cool that even our good, useful out news outlets have to be taken with a bullet.
Like, that's true, and I think
number one with a bullet.
I think the only other exceptions I can make are some of the more boutique blogs that are part of the Joystick Network, like WoW Insider. Like, I have some online friends who contribute to WoW Insider, and they do a good job. But I mean, that's a very specific, very specific offshoot of the Joystick Network. I think Joystick at large.
I think Joystick at large is getting better.
Uh huh.
The McElroy that I disliked, the one that gave the horrible review to Nier that was just embarrassing, is no longer with them. He went off to that joint venture that he, Brian Crescente, and sort of all of the other big bloggers went on to, do their conglomerate.
Ew.
I've never loaded that page up. I shouldn't talk negative about it, because despite the fact that I don't care for many of the personalities involved, maybe they're doing great work. I couldn't say for sure, and it would be inappropriate for me to bash them.
Yeah, you don't want to be like Bashcraft.
Really? I mean, true. But really? So, this thing happened with Ryan Perez. It just happened. So far, the only consequence we've seen, and I say only because it didn't involve me, I'm sure to this guy it's a very sad thing, is that he got fired from Destructoid. I don't know if he's going to continue having a career. I know that Dan Hsu, who used to be editor-in-chief at 1UP, or EGM, sorry, they were a shared entity, so it's hard to separate them when we're discussing them both in the same conversation. But Dan Hsu has tweeted him, telling him, hey, dude, just quit while you're ahead. You don't need to lose your career over this. So yeah.
But the kind of, perplexing thing is that he tweeted a couple hours ago, as of recording this, that he went up from, 50 to 250 followers because of this. And then, as of right now, it's, 2,000-ish.
So he got, 1,950 followers in the last 12 hours by bagging on Felicia Day and Will Wheaton.
And calling Will Wheaton a puddle of miscarriage soup. And so I find that alarming.
Yeah, it's really alarming.
Because that could have been 2,000 followers... new followers for Jeremy Parrish, who actually has things to say.
Yeah, or even, who I mentioned, Jim Sterling. That guy is brilliant. He sees a lot of problems with the industry. He writes about them in a way that I don't care for, but certainly those would be followers better suited to that than to this guy who thinks Felicia Day could be considered nothing more than a glorified booth babe.
That's offensive.
That's offensive, man. This guy has done more... this woman has done more for the industry than you have. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to attack. It's definitely not where I want to go with this, but it's hard not to get a little...
It's funny you mentioned booth babe, because when I was talking about that 1UP collective of articles about women in gaming, there was actually kind of an expose on booth babes. So that was kind of interesting.
So, I think we're actually going to move on. We're just really taking so much time for each one of these points today. But this is an ongoing discussion. This is not the last you're going to hear about this.
And of course, like we said, gaming journalism is kind of like a boys' club. When I went on Kotaku this morning to see, by chance, if they were going to report on it, of course they didn't.
No, game journalists don't rat on each other.
It was like a portal birthday cake or something,
Yeah, it's really alarming that a reasonably high-profile blogger can attack a beloved personality who has contributed to the industry... and all of the big news sources just don't care. That's offensive to me. I don't like that. I don't like that game journalism is basically an extension of public relations for the publishers right now. That's how I feel things are. And to that end, you know, Ryan Perez is almost, and in his defense, he's almost, I mean, at least he went out on the beaten path, went out off the beaten path, and spoke his mind honestly about what he thought was a problem in the games community and this sort of cult of personality. The problem is that he was rude, he was ill-researched, and to this moment, these tweets are still up. Like, he just attacked these people. So, the problem isn't questioning people. The problem isn't having questions and striking out on your own to do independent research. The problem is, if the voice of integrity, or the closest thing we have to a voice of integrity in games journalism, is a rude, arrogant, pompous dick who offends people openly for follows on Twitter, that speaks to the level of illness and corruption in games journalism right now, I feel.
Yeah, check yourself before you wreck yourself.
So, we just got things heavy, so I think it might be time to roll out our new segment and cheer you up. What do you say to that?
I say...
What's going on? So what we're going to do with this new segment, we're going to take a little time each week to talk about a game that you're, you know, probably missing out on. Sometimes this is going to be a left-of-center current-gen game, but I feel kind of like more often, at least as far as whatever game I'm talking about, it's probably going to be more of sort of, you know, like a golden game from yesteryear. But the goal is just going to be to kind of sing you the praises of some stuff a little off the beaten path. Because really, these sleepy months of summer after E3 are always kind of rough with not a lot to talk about. We lucked out this week, I hate to say it, but we lucked out that there was controversy, there was the Nintendo event and the Capcom event, and there was, you know, Sega collapsing.
Yeah.
But in terms of gaming news, kind of a slow one.
That's true. And, you know, we wanted to make a point of doing something different than being like, yeah, I've been playing Black Ops again this week.
Yeah, I don't just want to tell you what I'm playing right now if it's not interesting. So we're going to try this out. If you don't like it, tweet us. Let us know. Be like, dude, that segment is so dumb. And, you know, maybe you think that we are...
Puddles of Miscarriage Soup?
Puddles of Miscarriage Soup, exactly. Let us know, and we will stop doing this. But, really, I think that this will be an okay way to fill things up while we have a little less to talk about. John, why don't you tell everyone out there in Radioland about a game you think they're not familiar with that they should be?
So I actually picked up a PlayStation Vita the other week.
This bitch.
For all of the shit and dung I throw at PS3, I actually, you know, kind of recognize that the Vita's kind of a cool little system. So I picked one up, and I actually picked up Gravity Rush with it. And, you know, it's a pretty interesting and different game to hit the Western market, I would say.
It's
clever.
I am hell of stoked that you brought that up, because that is probably the best current game that no one is playing.
I mean, it is. You can go into a Target store and buy Gravity Rush. It's like, we are lucky that a game that's this different and kind of quirky with a Japanese feel. I mean, it's very Japanese.
Yeah, no, it is. It's super Japanese. And, you know, for those of you out there who are unfamiliar with Gravity Rush, we're going to post a video of it on GameBuie.org, because, seriously, it's kind of unlike anything else out there right now. It's a 3D platformer with, you know, collectathon elements. But it has this really neat gameplay hook that your main character can change and realign her sense of gravity, so that you can effectively just, you know, set gravity to the sky and fall into the sky. You can set gravity to be on the wall of a building, and then bam, you're walking on the side of the building, and your entire alignment of camera changes so that the ground is now the side of a building. And, you know, obviously there's all kinds of tricks and puzzles that you can build with
there's some
setup
character
like that.
Advancement elements, you know, you collect gems and you can, like, power up your different abilities. So, I mean, it's really neat. And, I mean,
I think one of the
coolest things to happen to platforming since Mario Galaxy, I would say.
Definitely. And I think it's interesting, you know, I once read a review of Super Mario Sunshine that called Sunshine a success because it calls into question the very design of platform games being based around how your main character moves.
Mm-hmm.
And that has sort of changed my perception of platforming games since then. And I notice all of my favorite platform games now are games that really use the prime gameplay hook as augmenting your method of travel. Mario Galaxy, which you brought up, comes into play here, you know, based on what gravity you're in. Your jumps reacts completely different. Your running speed and momentum.
And I love that you brought up Sunshine, because I think Sunshine does not get as much love as it deserves. I really like that game.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, you look at the design of the entire Mario series, and you start off with, you know, Super Mario Brothers, you have a very simple run and a jump, and basically every game from there has just added augmentations to how Mario runs and jumps.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and that's why I would, not to get into a Mario discussion, but I mean, that's why I think I still will stand by Mario, because it continues to advance the platforming genre forward.
Yeah, absolutely, and Mario Sunshine, to bring it back to what you were saying before we bring it back to what I was saying, Sunshine did the most, to me, with really augmenting, like, oh, you have these jetpack, this water jetpack that you can use, you have your water, the cannon one that really, like, shoots you super high. That whole game was just taking the essence of what makes Mario Mario and just ratcheting it up a notch.
Yeah, and I just have to say really quickly, sorry to give you out there a spoiler for an almost decade-old game if you haven't played it, but when it looked like Flood was almost dead, I almost cried.
I'm not surprised that you did, but I don't really care. Oh, that came out way meaner than I meant to.
But anyway, Gravity Rush, if you happen to be one of the 5 people in the United States who owns a Vita...
Yeah, then you should definitely...
Well, 6 now that I purchased one.
Right? There's no reason not to own Gravity Rush if you have a Vita, is basically where it's at. I have been singing its praises to everyone I know in real life, just constantly.
Right.
And in my goal for this segment, I was overreaching a little for the obscure. I totally neglected to mention Gravity Rush. And you have schooled me on this one, Slagkick, because that is a superb game that really needs to be talked about. It's really frustrating to me that such a good game that does so much right and has some really incredible music is just getting no love from the mainstream games journalism.
Yeah,
right,
well, they're too busy serving up some miscarriage soup, so...
Yeah. I wanted to talk about WayForward Technologies' Game Boy Color classic, Shantae.
Shantae, you stay!
Girl, I knew that was going to come up. Basically, it's a game about a hip-hop genie.
Oh my god.
With Mega Man and Metroidvania elements.
Now, are you playing that emulated, I'm assuming?
You know, I am. I do have a cartridge copy of it, but this game is so out of print. It's not currently available on Virtual Console for 3DS. So yeah, I downloaded a ROM and I'm playing it. And if they ever release it for purchase again, I'm going to buy the hell out of it. I recommend you do the same. In the meantime, there is a sequel to it, Shantae Risky's Revenge, that is available on iOS. It's available on the eShop for DSi and 3DS. It's like $4, and it's a great experience. Some of the best sprite work I've seen since Capcom's Mickey Mouse games.
Oh, yeah. Talk about
the Magical Quest or whatever.
Just to sidetrack really quickly, they showed a little clip of the Power of Two, or... No, what's the... they showed a little clip of the Power of Illusion game during the Direct conference, and oh my god, it does look like those Capcom classics. I am so excited.
Sega classics. And the... Yeah, I noticed, one thing that I really noticed was the jump animations are like, oh my god, that is literally the same jump animation. I am so excited right now. But yeah, so... Shantae, if you like Metroidvanias, you like Mega Man power-up style game systems, you should look into it. It's a great game. The guys at WayForward have been doing great with, bringing back 2D games. They did Contra 4 for DS a couple years back. They're doing that, okay, admittedly atrocious-looking Double Dragon remake. They did the Metroidvania-style Aliens game that just came out. Alien, I think it was Infestation. I'd have to check up on that.
Yeah, you know, now that you've explained kind of the what that game's about, when you first were talking about Hip Hop Genies, I was thinking of that Shaquille O'Neal movie. Was it Shazam or Kazam?
Kazam. I just watched that like a week ago.
Because there was a Genesis game based on Kazam, right?
Was there?
I think so.
The only Genesis game starring Shaq I played was Shaq Fu.
I thought there was a Kazam game. Maybe you'll have to find a ROM of that, and maybe next week you can talk about Kazam.
Yep. moving on. That was... What's going on? And, going from one segment to another, we are going now into... we're going to keep this close. I don't want to, we've already been doing quite a bit of complaining this episode about the current state of games journalism. So I just wanted to point out that in Kotaku's review of the new Penny Arcade game, the game that, we've all been dying to play, looked for many years, like episode 3 of the Rainslick Precipice of the Darkness, was never going to come out. It finally came out. It is now a retro-style throwback Super Nintendo-era JRPG.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's so fucking cool. And if you buy it on Steam right now, you get one of the same studio's other JRPGs that's in that style. So buy it on Steam if you haven't bought it yet. Anyway, in Kotaku's review, basically the reviewer just complains about how hard JRPGs are, and then... states that although you should buy the game, he actually quit after 10 hours and never finished it.
Really?
So, I have a problem with that. I have a problem with that for hella reasons. But basically, this is a well anticipated game, franchise that many people love, and a style of game that right now, like, fans of this genre are not being well served by the market. And you guys can't even assign a reviewer to it that likes that kind of game? Like, really? I have a problem. So, I don't want to grouse on that too much, we're not trying to be negative nannies about all this. It's just, these guys are getting paid to do this. Like, it is literally this guy's job to play through this game and then tell his reader base what he thought of the game after he experienced it. And he didn't. He didn't experience it all. He quit because JRPGs are hard or whatever. Like, I'm sorry, that's unacceptable to me. That should be unacceptable to everyone out there, too, I think. Honestly.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It would be my dream job to be a game... it would be my dream job to be a games journalist, but, honestly, in this state of games journalism, I... would prefer to be doing what we're doing right here.
Well, yeah, I would love to make money talking about video games. I obviously have strong opinions on them, but I don't know that I want to be paid to talk about games I don't like and act like I do, or whatever this weird incestuous bullshit is that is currently going on. I don't want to serve all that. So I did want to point out, rather than just be a negative nanny, I wanted to point out one positive article we read. And that was Stephen Totillo.
Yay, Totillo!
We have talked about Totillo writing some Loltakus in the past. But he had a great opinion piece on Kotaku this past week about liking the Wii U. And he goes over all of the reasons why he likes the Wii U.
Good for him.
And, you know, you might be questioning whether we're posting this just because it's a positive Nintendo piece. And the truth is that your perception would even go to that place is a sign of how bad games journalism is right now. There shouldn't be any question about bias or console loyalty in, you know, an impartial journalistic endeavor. Like, there should not be a question about bias. Yeah. But there is. There's definitely a perceived anti-Nintendo bias among the Kotaku user base, if the comments on that article are to be believed.
Well, you know what's actually interesting is that, only a couple days prior to that article, I believe it was Totillo again, posted about how the Wii U is going to be, overshadowed by the PS4 and the next Xbox 720 or whatever. And I mean, even though, you know...
Well, as a buzz line, as a headline to get hits, I think that's really sensationalist and yes. gross.
But it wasn't terribly Loltaku.
But the article, and that's why we're not posting the article, because it's a valid question to some degree to ask.
But the interesting thing is that the commenters were like, oh look, Kotaku's already starting to bash Nintendo, must be a slow news week.
That's funny.
So I mean, the thing is that even Kotaku's own readers, while some of them may be Nintendo bashers themselves, some of them are like, hey. And you know, I just have to say, I think that's great that even Kotaku's own readers are like, hey, yeah.
Ein Minuten bitte. As a reference to an Eddie Izzard joke about, hey, I have a problem here. In reference to Martin Luther. Yeah, no, but Kotaku's readers are starting to stand up with a list, basically, of just like, hey, this shit is jacked. Like, please don't do this.
Yeah, power to the people.
And, you know, that's been half of our mission statement from the first episode of this show, is just, there's a problem with how the news is getting reported, and it shouldn't be a noteworthy piece for us that Kotaku posted a pro-Nintendo article. It should be completely normal that Stephen Totillo wrote a piece about a console he likes. It shouldn't be shocking. That should be the norm. Every time a console is announced, if there's someone who likes it, there should be a post about this. I like it, and this is why.
And if they don't like it, to have some valid reasons, not yeah. be like, the graphics look like dung, and the games are for babies.
This isn't going to get PS3 ports, or PS4 ports.
Who if you wanna play, cares?
If you want to play PS4 games, go buy a PS4. Like, until we have a one-console future, there's always going to be games that don't get
ported.
And
I just have to say, if there's a one-console future, I sure as hell hope it's a Nintendo console.
Yeah, right? So, again, good job, Kotaku, for putting together a well-stated opinion piece.
Oh, good job, Totillo.
Yeah. Stated your opinion, you were positive, and it would have been okay to be negative if you gave explanation for your negativity rather than just being negative. But good job. I mean, you know, you came out, you explained what you like, you explained how asymmetrical gameplay appeals to you, which is obviously something near and dear to my heart, as we discussed on this show previously. I just think it's great that you guys, you know, stepped up and did a pro piece on something that that people definitely feel you guys are generally biased against. So, good job. I dare say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we have hit all the notes we meant to hit today.
Yes, and I mean, at that point, you know, we actually do have one thing that is different than past week's Game Buoy. We got some tweets.
Oh!
And you know, since we have not had tweets until now, we haven't really thought of a proper name to call this, so we're just gonna read our tweets.
Yeah. We'll get a jingle of some kind together if you all tweet us enough to make it necessary.
And you know what? Our Twitter is Game Buoy Podcast.
Game Buoy Podcast.
And if you tweet us some ideas for what our Twitter segment should be, or Facebook and that stuff, but I mean, Twitter, it seems to be where people like to...
I effing love Twitter, and you should tweet us.
Yeah. Anyways, we got some tweets. I am super happy. The first tweet we got was actually from OLR. They just wanted to thank us for all the shout-outs, so we love you. And I just have to say, happy 10th anniversary, OLR.
Yeah, that is incredible. I hope that 10 years from now, they're celebrating their 20 and we're celebrating our 10.
And then Kirby is celebrating the 38th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah. And that'll be great. We can have a Kirby party.
Indeed. So congratulations, and it's our pleasure, OLR. So thank you. They gave us a little shout-out, too, in that tweet. So
aww.
We greatly appreciate it. We got a tweet from Snow Hoodie on Twitter.
Oh, he has an adorable icon.
Yes. And I apologize. I don't know anything about this person. I'm saying a he because it's a little, like, dude sprite, but...
Yeah, if you're a lady, thank you still. You're still awesome and you still have a super cute avatar.
Snow Hoodie said, I like your attitude, friends. People gather and listen to them.
Aw, thank you. If there's something that you are putting out there, Snow Hoodie, let us know. We'll definitely pimp that for you.
Yeah, I noticed that Snow Hoodie has a WordPress, so...
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, again... To me, sort of the exciting thing about doing a podcast is that we can bring sort of our own flavor to the mix. Hopefully that's what you mean by our attitude, because we intend to continue serving that up.
Yes, and I, as Snow Hoodie said, I hope people continue to gather and listen to us.
Yes, me too.
There's just something very zen and haiku-like about that tweet.
I love it.
It just made me feel very, very happy. And Dan Diaz on Twitter... mentioned us twice in Twitter. One of his tweets said, for the record, straight men can love games like No More Heroes and Lollipop Chainsaw for more than, wahaha, who am I kidding? Which I assume
he means boobies.
Yeah, so.
But, you know, I think that's awesome, actually, that he said that. I just want to point out, we do have the perspective here of, you know, two gay dudes that game. Whatever. I mean, it's whatever. But sometimes our perspective is skewed. So if you want to reach out to us and give us your insight on something that we're not seeing because of our perspective, by all means, please do. I think it's... I would love to hear what a straight man has to say about... And I mean, you know, the easy out
Choiniki.
Here. Choiniki. I was just going to say the easy out here would be Choiniki. But actually, I would really like to hear about something like sort of the homosexual sub-stories in Persona 4. I would like to know how a straight male gamer feels about that kind of content. So if there's anyone listening to this and you want to talk about Persona 4 and how you feel about Kanji's storyline in that game, please let me know. I would be really fascinated to have a dialogue about that.
And so he also tweeted, it was more of a mention than a tweet at us, but he said, just caught up with Game Buoy Podcast. It made me realize how diverse gaming is when I get new info from months-old podcasts. Good show.
Oh, well, thank you. That's actually our whole mission statement in a nutshell. We want to talk about different opinions, different viewpoints, and, you know, also obviously talk about stuff that maybe isn't being reported elsewhere.
Indeed.
So, thank you, Dan.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay, birds, get out of Get out of the...
Shoo.
Yeah, yeah.
Shoo, this is not Beauty and the Beast. We are not a Disney princess. Surprisingly.
Unfortunately. So,
I think that's it for today.
It is. We'd like to give our shout-outs to Orange Box Radio. Happy 10th anniversary.
Happy 10th anniversary.
Just everyone, you know, over on the VOG network.
All of those guys. Just superb. You know, Girls Gone Wow. Best Little Horde House in Azeroth. Whom, I guess, probably... We'll probably have more to say about the Mass Effect 3
right?
extended cut
hey,
than
Shane.
We did. Hey, we love you, bitches.
And Nerdgasm Network.
Yeah, Nerdgasm Network. Those guys are great.
If you are out there listening, you have a blog, or you have a podcast, or something like that out there, please tweet us, email us, Facebook us, but mostly tweet us.
Yeah, if you're doing anything that is left of center and different from the same old that you see everywhere else, please let us know.
We would love to shout out to you.
Even if you don't like us, I would like to shout out to you, frankly. There is nothing better for this industry and the player base than diversification and reaching out and sort of, I think, being more inclusive rather than less. So, please feel free to reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter. I don't know how many times we can talk about Twitter in one episode, but I'm sure we can handle one more. Again, our Twitter handle is GameBuoyPodcast.
GameBuoyPodcast.
And you can email us at...
Well, Captain Spike is at cpt.spike@gamebuoy.org.
cpt.spike@gamebuoy.org.
And you can reach me at slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
slagkick@gamebuoy.org.
You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/gamebuoy.
I'm not repeating that one. It's just Facebook. You can search us on Facebook. Let's be real.
Yeah, and then you can like us, and then everybody and your grandma will see that you liked us. Because Facebook has shit privacy settings.
Yep. So, until next time, guys, have fun, keep gaming, keep thinking, and we'll see you later.